Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, ready to take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. She comes by about once a month to talk with us, and always great, always lots of wonderful information comes out of this program, and certainly today's going to be no exception. You can join in if you have a question about your pet's health. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, thank you for joining us again.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I always love this. This is my favorite time of the month, is to be able to come in and talk to everybody.
Well, you know, I love to have you on, and so do our listeners. And I'm betting most of us will deal with the aging of a pet at some time or another. And I know you wanted to talk about signs of aging a little bit and what may or may not be normal.
Yeah.
When do you consider a cat or a dog to be mature?
It really varies with the breed. Not all dogs are alike. A lot of giant breed dogs like Great Danes and things are going to age a lot faster than breeds like miniature poodles or chihuahuas. Every kind of breed of dog and size of dog has different things that will start to show up as they start to age. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because I've had several people come in recently and are just wondering, why is my dog turning gray? Why is the skin looking flakier? These things that are kind of normal things that you would expect to happen as dogs get older. And there's some things that we can do something about and other things that you just have to accept it gracefully.
Yeah, can't do anything about that. Gray hair.
I know. Yeah, and that's one of those things.
I'm loving proof of that.
Although I did have a colleague one time who had a dog that was, she always loved her black labs, and she ended up adopting this mixed breed dog that looked like a black lab but had white feet. And she decided she was going to dye the dog's feet black and used human hair dye, and it turned out blue. So the dog walked around with blue feet and blue eyebrows and so on for a long time. So yeah, don't try to cover it up, just enjoy it.
Oh my goodness. Well, growing old doesn't really necessarily mean we're unhealthy.
Not at all. But there are some things that you can do to make your dog's senior years better for them. And if you kind of anticipate these changes, it's going to be helpful. I mean, one of the big things that we see a lot of is cognitive decline, where the dog just is kind of developing some senility type things. And just like with people, exercise, social interaction, mind games are all those things that are going to help keep that dog mentally young at heart. And there's all kinds of new kind of interactive dog pet toys and things like that that are really helpful. I just bought my dogs this gum machine that has instead of a dial, it has a bone that they have to foot it. And if they can push it down, they can get a piece of dog food will come out. And talk about them just being like interacting with each other, interacting with this. I mean, simple things like that can really make a difference in bringing the dog to life.
Mm. And the same with cats?
Same with cats, too. I mean, having them hunt for their meal. Obviously, as they're getting older, they may not be able to jump up on things. But, hiding it in different places so they have to wander around, get some activity, is really going to be helpful. Because that's joint problems, and muscle wasting is one of the things that we see. And so that activity is important for that as well.
What role does diet play in?
That's a really interesting thing. There's so many dog and cat senior diets on the market, but there's really no regulation when it comes to what constitutes a senior diet. What I think you'd probably want to see is a senior diet that is going to have extra joint support agents in it, like glucosamine, chondroitin sulfate, and so on. Probably extra antioxidants, vitamin E, and so on. That's really helpful, again, for brain aging as well. I think that there are two groups of seniors that we see, the fat seniors and the skinny seniors. And so a lot of senior dog foods tend to be lower in calories, but that may not be appropriate for the skinny senior. They may lose more weight. But, you know, having your dog on a senior diet, again, some are better than others, but those are the things you want to be looking for is do they have extra antioxidant vitamins, joint support things? You know, what are they doing for maybe fiber control, since we know that colonic motility tends to slow down and they may need a little extra fiber? Kind of sounds like us, doesn't it, Larry?
Yes, you're
sitting over there smiling and going, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But there is talk about trying to have better regulations regarding what is considered a senior food. And so in time, we will have, you know, probably better diets out there that's going to meet the needs of seniors.
In your experience, are there things that people might think, well, that's normal aging, that really could be something else? Or?
Yeah, definitely. Things like hearing loss. And, you know, hearing loss is considered fairly normal. But, if the dog has an ear infection or a tumor or something, that may be something that could be taken care of. So if you're noticing your dog's hearing isn't quite as good as it was, have them checked out. Vision loss as well is one of those things where people, you know, assume that, you know, as dogs get older, they're not going to be able to see as well. When we do cataract surgery on dogs, and it brings them back to life, they go from being really visually impaired to now having a life where they can see.
Oh,
so
man.
There are things like that we can do that may go a little bit above and beyond what many owners want to do for their pets. But if it's a healthy senior, giving them their vision back may make all the difference.
Oh, I would think. Absolutely. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine, Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for joining in. And lots of callers. There's still one open line. We can get you on at 1-800-642-1234. If you have a photo of your pet you'd like to share, that's always kind of one of the fun parts of the show. As a matter of fact, on our Facebook page, you can go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and post your photo of your pet. And also certainly ask your question or tell us your experiences with your pet as well right there. Eileen in Racine has a question, so let's go there. Eileen, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 15-year-old Shepherd mix, female, and over the last 6 months or so, she started leaking urine. The telltale sign was the smell on her bed. She doesn't seem to know she's doing it. I took her to the vet for her shots just in January, and they prescribed Proin, which is basically Dexatrim. I looked that up online, and there's all kinds of warnings against it with dogs. Actually, a lot of dogs seem to have had strokes after taking it.
Mm-hmm.
Should I worry about this incontinence? Should I give her this Proin? What's your advice?
Well, it's very common for female dogs, especially after they've been spayed, to run into problems with having a bladder sphincter that just isn't quite as tight as it was when they were younger. And this can start sometimes within months of being spayed, or it may happen as they get older. First thing, if I have an owner come in and said, you know, my dog's leaking urine, I want to rule out medical causes. Is there something that is happening to this dog that's making them make more urine, such as are they diabetic? Do they have kidney disease? Do they have some type of endocrine disease like Cushing's disease, which may make them drink more and then, you know, the bladder just can't hold the all the urine that it's producing, so they're producing more urine and obviously leaking then. So we want to rule out medical things. So that means getting some blood work, a good urinalysis done. Sometimes we like to be able to check and see what the specific gravity or the concentrating ability is first thing in the morning. So, you know, taking your dog in with a urine sample that you've collected may be helpful, but also having a sterile one collected at the clinic would be helpful as well. If we've ruled out medical reasons, then we have to look at what drugs we can use. And yes, Proin is one of the more common drugs that we use for treating urinary incontinence. It's called an alpha agonist, and there's a lot of nerve receptors on that bladder sphincter that that respond with that particular drug and tighten it up. The downside of it is we also have those receptors in some of our blood vessels as well. And so that particular particular class of drug was available for humans because it causes sometimes appetite decrease, and it was dexedrine, which was available years ago over the counter, but many people were taking it and ran into trouble with having strokes or severe hypertension. We see the same thing happening in dogs as well. Although for dogs, there's usually a medical reason for being hypertensive. We don't see essential hypertension like we do in people because we just don't see hardening of the arteries like humans get. So typically, if I have an older patient and we're contemplating putting the dog on Proen, I'm going to be checking blood pressure before I put them on it. I'm also going to be checking after they've been on it for a little bit to see if it's gone up. If you know, we don't want to go through that hassle, there are a couple of other drugs that we can use. They're estrogen type drugs. There's one that we've been using for years in the veterinary world called DES, diethylstilbestrol. You can't get it commercially available. It usually has to be made through a formulating pharmacy, but is considered to be very safe. We use it typically after a loading dose about once a week, keeps dogs under control. And now there's actually another one that's on the market, and I believe it goes by the brand name of Incurin. It's a licensed estrogen supplement for dogs that is different than DES. You have to give it more frequently than once a week, but that is a new one. I've only got a couple of patients that are on that just because the DES is fairly inexpensive and with all
working.
The good yeah and works, so we use that. So if your vet didn't check blood pressure, that'd be something to go back and have that looked into.
There you go.
Okay.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Eileen. Appreciate your call. Visiting with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Getting some great advice for keeping your pet happy and healthy from Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. And Tatiana, from Muscadet is up next with a question, so let's go to her. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. Over the holidays, we found a really skinny, cold stray cat on the back porch, and we brought her in thinking that we wouldn't keep her, but I wanted to fatten her up before we found her a new home. And recently she's been throwing up piles of worms, and we have another cat, and we have a dog that likes to clean the litter box for us if we don't get to it in time. So, and we have three kids, two adults and three animals, and I'm afraid we all have worms. And the other day I found a big flatworm or a tapeworm. So I got diatomaceous earth. We're all taking that. Do you know about that? And do we all have to go to the doctor and to the vet, or is there a way we can take care of this and make sure that we know we're fine?
I'm really happy that you called about this because if I came back in another life form, I would be a veterinary parasitologist. I love working with parasites because they're so logical and there are, you know, fairly easy treatments to get things under control. But what I would recommend is that before you start getting really worried about what's going on with your family, have a veterinarian check a stool sample on this cat to see what parasite eggs this cat may be shedding. It sounds like you've seen a tapeworm, which is, they tend to be little flat segmented worms. Then you may just see little pieces in the hair around the rectum, maybe in the bedding area, maybe on the surface of the stool before it gets buried in the litter box. And those tapeworms are actually probably some of the safest parasites that we can be exposed to from our pets. Most of the tapeworms, well, all tapeworms have to go through what's called an intermediate host, which means that there is no direct transfer from cat to cat or cat to dog. The two most common tapeworms we see either have to spend part of their life cycle in the body of a flea, so the cat may have fleas or may have had fleas and ingested one off its body. Okay. Alternatively, they can get them from eating rodents and rabbits and so on outdoors. And her being a stray, that may be how she ended up, you know, surviving, is catching things and being a predator. Easy enough to get those parasites, the tapeworms, taken care of. We usually use a product that contains an ingredient called Praziquantel. It's available over the counter, okay, and so you can get it at like farm supply stores and so on. But you can also get kind of more broad spectrum products from your veterinarian that may be easier for you to get into your cat. There's one that the Bayer company makes. It's called Profender, which has praziquantel, but also has another drug in there that will get roundworms and hookworms as well. And there's also tableted medications. There's one that's called Drontal that we can use in cats. It's broad spectrum for tapeworms and roundworms and hookworms as well. So that may be the best way to go, is having this, you know, having a stool sample checked and maybe getting some medication from a veterinarian. But because these are prescription drugs, you are going to have a patient doctor owner relationship for before the veterinarian can write a prescription for this cat. So it may mean taking her in to have her looked at. Cats typically don't vomit up tapeworms. They may vomit up roundworms, though, and they tend to look like spaghetti. And the interesting things about those is, although cats tend to shed a lot of eggs in their stool, it takes about 2 weeks in a good environment, such as in soil or a moist environment, for those eggs to be able to become infective. So if your dog were to go in and raid the litter box, one, it's kind of a dry environment, and I would guess that you're probably cleaning the box more frequently than every 2 weeks. So very unlikely that your dog is going to be picking up anything like roundworms from the cat. But there are some other parasites like Giardia that the dog may be able to pick up that may be spread in the stool as well. So it gets right back to get a diagnosis so we know what the right treatment will be. But I wouldn't worry about your family at this point. I think more maybe other cats that may be sharing the litter box, especially if you're not practicing good litter hygiene and cleaning it every day or two.
Mm-hmm. So what do you know about diatomaceous earth?
I don't. I would be hesitant to start taking anything like that. To my knowledge, there has been, we don't use it in the veterinary world for treating parasites because there are other more effective drugs, and it may not be something that your family needs to even take, especially if you have the cat checked out and make sure that, you know, these are parasites that are treated effectively and you're practicing good hygiene and so on. Very unlikely that you're going to run into troubles. I do recommend a website if you have questions on particular parasites. They have a section for owners as well as veterinarians, and it is the Companion Animal Parasite Council, and it's their website is capcvet.org. Okay, so capcvet.org, and you can look at all kinds of creepy crawlies, and it's, you know, for someone that doesn't enjoy parasites, it may be a little overwhelming.
Diatomaceous earth, to me, you know, that is often spread on the ground to kill slugs because it has, it's like razor blades.
Right, yeah.
Very sharp. I don't know that
I don't mean eating it. No,
I mean,
I know you use it in swimming pools for, like, in their filter systems and things like that. But, boy, I would be forcing my family to take.
No.
I've been taking it for a week.
Okay.
I
would talk to your physician, and I think number one is get that cat into a veterinarian for just a good, you know, physical exam so that you can place it in a home with a clear conscience that you're not sending a cat with feline leukemia, FIV, fleas, intestinal parasites onto somebody else.
Yep, there you go. Thanks, Tatiana. Appreciate your call. Yeah, I would not take diatomaceous earth. Judy in Two Harbors, Minnesota, your turn.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi. I have a 13-year-old English cocker, and he suddenly went deaf after a hunting trip, and our vet thinks maybe it was the shotgun blast that did it. The vet checked him for any ear problems. There were none. And I'm just wondering if there's anything that can be done, like a hearing aid for dogs or something like that.
Unfortunately, there are, to my knowledge, there are no commercially available hearing aids for dogs. They tried marketing one back in the early 90s, but it just fell flat. You can do hearing testing in dogs, though, but it's much more involved than it is in people. And what they do is the dogs are usually sedated a little bit. They put little electrodes, tiny, tiny needles under their scalp, and they do an audio-evoked response where they make a series of clicks in the dog's ears, and then they're able to average the electrical signals that are picked up by the brain and be able to determine where the hearing loss is occurring. Is it in the ear or is it in the brain? And, you know, hearing loss is a normal aging change, and it's, you know, just like how many people are walking around with hearing aids. It can happen. It may be related to loud noises, but I would doubt that one hunting trip would be enough to trigger this. I'm wondering if it was the dog is hearing impaired, and if you took them out on a hunting trip and they were in a new environment and couldn't follow orders, didn't know what was going on, and so you recognize that the dog was deaf in that situation. That happens frequently, especially with visual impairment as well. At home, the dog knows its way around, but they come into the vet clinic and they start bumping into things because it's a new environment. So that it may have been something that has been kind of slowly progressive for a long time.
I have a hard time imagining. I mean, you shoot a couple times or three times, and the dog is not right next to the gun.
Right, Yeah, so I doubt it. My guess is that 13-year-old dog, this is probably something that's just going on. So things that you can do, make sure you don't startle the dog. You can train the dog to maybe respond to flicking a light switch where that'll get the dog's attention. You know, stamp the floor when you walk into a room so that you, again, if the dog's sleeping soundly, you're not going to startle them if you suddenly touch them. And, you know, just being careful that you are the dog's ears when they're outside because they can't, you know where traffic is or anything just because they can't hear it.
Yeah. Judy, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. And I see Judith has put up the capcvet.org website up on our Facebook page. She's got that up there already. So if you, going back to an earlier call, if you want to take a look at that, it's right there. You can click on it and take a quick look. So there you go. Evelyn and Delavan, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, we have a 4-year-old Puggle, and about a year ago, we noticed that one eye was starting to cloud up, and we took her to the vet, and she has a cataract. So she was about 3. Now we see that it is starting in another eye, not near as bad. Basically, the vet said, you know, the dogs can get along fine if they're blind. But I heard you say something about doing surgery on cataracts, and I guess if she was blind in one eye, I wouldn't feel so bad, but now it looks like it's happening in the other eye. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about having surgery and how expensive it might be if we see that it is going to start happening. It came on her very rapidly.
Yeah, we can see cataracts not only being an age-related change, but we also know that they can be inherited. And there are it's really unfortunate that there are certain breeds of dogs, Cocker Spaniels, Siberian Huskies, some poodles and things like that, where we know that it is a genetic predisposition to developing cataracts. And, you know, being a Puggle, which
is
a pug and beagle mix, you know, who knows what, you know, genetically was transmitted. We can sometimes see cataracts, too, from trauma to the eye, if they've had some type of inflammatory change where you've got, you know, the iris adhering to the lens that can induce a cataract. There's other things that can be triggering this as well. You know, I like to tell people that, you know, dogs don't have to drive a car or read or crochet, and so fine vision probably isn't that important, but I think that it still makes them much happier if they, you know, are able to get along. And yeah, but blind dogs can get along fine as long as you don't change the environment. I was just at the dog park the other day with my dog, and a lady jumped out of the car with 5 dogs, and one of them was totally blind, and it just followed the other dogs and would follow her voice. And I have never seen a dog. I mean, it went for just, I mean, acres of coverage of this dog park, totally blind. And there was a good example of just how well adjusted dogs can be. But I think that what I would recommend is getting an opinion of a veterinary ophthalmologist. We have them at the veterinary school. There are several other places in the state that have veterinary ophthalmologists on staff that can evaluate your dog to make sure that the one that they would be a good candidate for having the surgery done. If there's any like retina degeneration, which sometimes goes hand in hand with cataracts, then that would, you know, make surgery not an option for your dog. But that would be your best bet, is get another opinion and just find out what may be triggering this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we did get a hold of the breeder, and she's very reputable, and she has not had any problems with any of her her mom's or dad's, any of the litters with this. Mm-hmm. But what we've noticed is that about a little over a year ago, Piper started developing allergies. And she was scratching a lot, so then we're wondering if she didn't scratch her eye.
Yeah, usually if they scratch their eye, you're going to see corneal damage. So the cornea, that clear surface that if you wear contact lenses sit on top of, can sometimes become cloudy or scarred from damage that way. And so it's possible, but again, it usually is not going to interfere with vision once the, you know, scratch or ulcer is healed up.
So get in there and get an opinion.
Get an opinion, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. I want to give Joan in Cresco, Iowa, a chance to join us. Hi, Joan. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Dr. Sandy. Thank you so much for having this wonderful program. I have a question that has already been resolved, but I've always been curious about whether the resolution was the way I should have taken it.
Okay.
I inherited a small dog from my sister when she passed away. He was a 14-year-old Chihuahua who seemed very healthy and very active, but was never quite as active after she died.
Mm-hmm.
And we had all the records. She was a great carer of her animals, and I had all of her medical records for the dog.
Oh.
And so it had always been up to date on everything.
Uh-huh.
And I have a very good vet, and I have lots of dogs in my own life, so I'm pretty familiar with them. And we took the little Chihuahua in to get its annual shots, and they reviewed the records and gave them whatever we give here locally. She mm-hmm. lives in Eugene, Oregon, so mm-hmm. it was quite a difference being in the Midwest. And he did fine with the shots. And then like 3 or 4 weeks later, I realized because of adding the extra dogs from her family, I was going to have to take them to a kennel, and uh-huh. I was going to go out of town. So the vet came to give them all intranasal kennel cough.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the way they give it, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I asked him when the dog had been in for its shots. I thought he seemed pretty healthy, but again, had only had him in my own household for about 3 months. But he seemed muscular, fit, and certainly active. Again, a little less uh-huh. when my sister died. They never said anything like, oh, he's an old dog or anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I looked up Chihuahuas, there wasn't much actually on the internet about how long they live.
Uh-huh.
But after he got the intranasal kennel cough, the very next day, he was really dizzy.
Mm.
Oh. When he'd get up, or if he stood up, he would, like, try to do a circle, and he would fall down.
Oh, my goodness.
And when I called the vets, then they said, well, he's an old dog. And we took him in, and they decided to put him down.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. I'm so sorry.
No,
Yeah, you know,
should you have done that?
Should you have done that? I don't think there is any correlation between those two things. The intranasal Bordetella vaccination that we use, the main side effects that we're going to see would be some sneezing, maybe a little reverse sneezing, which is more just because the caudal part of the pharynx gets a little irritated. You may see, and it's uncommon, about 2 to 10 days post vaccination, they may develop a kind of a mild form of kennel cough because it's a modified live vaccine or Bacterin that we're giving nasally. What I am concerned about is, why did your dog suddenly develop vestibular balance problems with not being able to stand up and, you know, falling over? A common age-related problem in dogs for them to develop, we actually give it the name old dog vestibular disease. They get a sudden onset, normal for, you know, one moment, and then boom, they're like they've been on the tilt-a-whirl. They can't get up. Their eyes are flicking and drifting. They're very dizzy. They may be nauseous. For most dogs, this is a self-limiting thing, supportive care, and within a few days, they're back to being their old self again. But we will also see other things that can cause vestibular disease in dogs, anything from a nasty inner ear infection to brain tumors to potentially vascular accidents. We don't see strokes that often in dogs, but, you know, things like that as well. And so, you know, I'm sorry that your dog, you know, ended up having its life taken. I wish I could give you some other advice that would help you with dealing with the emotions that you're going through. But I don't think the vaccine was at all related. So I hope that gives you some peace.
To another dog, what you're saying is it would be worth trying to just support them for a couple of days to see what would happen.
Yeah, and you know, often we go through a full neurologic exam to try to figure out, you know, what, you know, where in the balance system the problem is. Sometimes we even have to resort to jumping in and doing things like MRIs and so on if we're concerned about a central vestibular problem. But in many cases, you know, just a tincture of time and these dogs do get better. So,
She had said she didn't. There were actually three dogs in her life, and all of them died within a year of her dying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Well, I'm so sorry, but you did the right thing.
Yeah.
Kennel cough in an older dog is not something you want them to get if they have to be boarded.
No. It's not your fault.
It isn't.
So, and that's probably no consolation, but we certainly feel your pain.
Yeah.
Joan, and thank you so much for calling, but erase that. It's not your problem. So
yeah,
it's
and you
not
know, one,
your fault.
One of the things that I always recommend is if there is questions on why an animal has died suddenly, or you know, even if it wasn't sudden, is having an autopsy or a necropsy, as we call it in the veterinary mm-hmm. world, done. It really helps with closure when you get answers.
Yeah. Good luck, Joan. Thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. We have other callers online. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Jim in Camp Douglas has a question for us. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello there. Yeah, I've got two quick ones. I've got a 69, 70-pound yellow lab that I want to get some boots for. I'm outside with him quite a bit, and his feet, they can handle it, but when it gets really cold and stuff, I thought that maybe there'd be something that he could wear as far as boots went. And then I'm giving him an oral medication for fleas and ticks rather than the ointment on the back and rub it in. And I'm just wondering if that's the way to go with that, too. And I'll just...
Yeah,
okay. Listen.
All right. Booties are one of those individual things for dogs. Some dogs tolerate them and other dogs don't. I think what happens is when you've got a real, you know, like a rubber sole or a lot of padding in the boot, the dogs don't have that feeling of the floor contacting their feet, and it can make them pretty disoriented and they want to lift their feet up and they just don't like them. If I had to pick a booty that most dogs tolerate, I just went on and Googled booties on my computer, and if you look at images, you'll see dogs wearing these ones that look like balloons on their feet. I don't know exactly what the name is, but they're available all over the place in different sizes. The downside is that the nails pop through them if they've got long nails, so you do have to keep the nails trimmed and maybe filed so that they don't pop through. But those are waterproof, gives the dog still some sensation because they're not that thick, and yet will prevent the damage from salt and things outside. I am changing topic here. The oral flea and tick products, there's two of them on the market now. One is called NexGard by the Mariel Company, and then the other one is called Bravecto by Merck. The NexGard lasts for a month. The Bravecto lasts for 3 months. They're basically the same chemical, just slightly different molecules, so one lasts a little bit longer. They're both in a chewable tablet. Initially, when it came out, we were thinking that this would be for dogs that are kind of low risk for fleas and ticks. But what we're finding is that dogs that are in really heavy tick areas, they're finding that it works just so well at keeping fleas and ticks off the dog. So I like it. It's not that it's not cheap. I know the Bravecto runs about $40 a dose, so you're looking at, you know, every 3 months spending about $40, which is about the cost of some of the spot-on products. And to be honest with you, I don't know the cost of NexGard off the top of my head, but I think it's equivalent to what a spot-on product would be. So I'm glad that your dog's on it. Nice and safe.
Well, that's the information I was looking for. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show if you want to see some great photos of pets, people's pets. Christina sent a nice one of her diva of the house, all cozy on the couch, her kitty. And Cheryl has got several dog photos that are great. And let's see. Of course, I can't get the thing to work.
Look at that. Yep.
Wow, look at him run. So there.
Yep.
And Williams sent one. So that's a pretty shot there of a looks like a lab and a border collie.
Yeah. Two active dogs. Yeah.
A couple of active dogs. Anyway, I hope you'll go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and take a look at some of the great photos. They're over on the left side of the page under posts to the page. And one thing I always forget to do is click on Seymour's stories on the bottom, because that allows more of the photos to come up. So there you go. You can join in again at 1-800-642-1234. Lorraine in Houston, Minnesota has another good question. Hi, Lorraine. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a cat who's, I think he's 13 or 14 years old. I don't know how relevant that is, but he's been... I've had a growing mouse infestation, and he's been catching and eating some, and sometimes I just find a little dead mouse, and he didn't eat anything. And recently, I've had traps under the counter of the sink in the kitchen counter, the lower part. And yesterday, we found... partially devoured mice from the traps. Another factor is I notice his feces has recently become kind of mushier than mm-hmm. it used to be, and I'm wondering if that's related to eating mice, and are mm-hmm. there things I should worry about?
Yeah, if you've got a cat that is a predator and ingesting things, a really good idea would be to, on a routine basis, have your cat go through a thorough deworming with a broad spectrum dewormer that would get tapeworms, roundworms, and hookworms. Those are probably going to be the big things that you're going to be running into trouble with. The Center for Disease Control, it recommends that if you have a cat that hunts or a dog that is a predator and eating things, that at least quarterly you go through a dewormer for tapeworms. I would recommend that you get your cat into your veterinarian, bring a fresh stool sample with you so that they can do a fecal flotation to find out what your cat may have. Some parasites, like tapeworms, you're not going to see on a fecal flotation. That's going to be more observation on the surface of the stool or around the cat's rectum or in the cat's bedding. You'll see little rice grain type segments there. So even if it comes back negative, does not mean that your cat doesn't have tapeworms. So I think for your cat's health, routine deworming would be helpful. Please don't use rodenticides in your house, any of the chemical baits, because if the mouse ate a bellyful and your cat then ate it, we can get some secondary toxicities. So I'm glad you're just using traps. But I think just the deworming is the big thing that we have to be concerned about.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Larry Mueller here with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, professor of veterinary medicine at the UW-Madison School of Vet Medicine. Always great to have her along. Certainly, if you want to join in, you can email us at talk@WPR.org, post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or go online to, I guess I gave that already, it's the phone number, 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call. Did have an email from Mary Jo, who said she heard you talk about the bubblegum machine for dogs that drops a piece of dog food. Can you tell her where to purchase this? She knows her dog would love that.
Yeah, I ended up getting it on eBay. So I just looked up, you know, a bubblegum machine for dogs, and it came up. So I'd seen one for cats that actually has a wheel on the front with carpet on it that the cat has to scratch at, and then food pops out. So I can't keep mine out because the dogs will empty it. They figured out how to do it, and it's like, so it's one of those things where I can put it out a couple times a day, and they have fun, you know, playing with it. But there are other interactive toys, though, for dogs that are mazes that you can put food in where they have to move a little, you know, door back and forth with their paw. And so, you know, don't think that that's the only one out there. There, just look up, you know, Google interactive pet toys or dog toys, and all these things will come up. They're really fun for dogs to have, especially in the winter when they're inside and bored.
Yeah, and same for cats.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they have similar things for cats as well.
Jeremy in Waukesha, thanks a lot for calling. Hi, appreciate your call.
Hi, I have a question about my cat we adopted a few years ago from Hawes. And about 4 months after we got him, he started coughing. We thought it was like a hairball, but we took him in and the x-rays showed that, you know, he had a lot of inflammation in his lungs. So now he's on prednisolone, 5 milligram, half a tablet twice a day. And I'm just wondering if there's any other underlying problems that could maybe be like some kind of infection. Before we got him, he was in some kind of foster care for upper respiratory infection. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not sure if maybe there's some deeper infection that can be causing this instead of, you know, whatever it may be, since it kind of came on suddenly.
Yeah. Well, I just want to back up a little bit. This is one of the things that I'm always curious about is why people think when a cat is coughing that it is a hairball. Cats vomit up hairballs. They don't cough them up. And so very, very different. And anybody that comes in and says, yeah, my cat's, you know, making this funny coughing sound and no hairs coming up, but I'm still giving them the laxatone or whatever. You know, the first thing I look at is do we have a cat with lower respiratory disease like asthma? Asthma in cats is actually pretty common. And it's possible that the cat coming into your home, maybe being exposed to household allergens, house dust mites, cigarette smoke, different things that may be in the carpet and so on, maybe one of the things that is triggering it. And so it can come on fairly suddenly in many cats. And that's probably why your cat is on prednisone. Now, when it comes to treating asthma, we can definitely switch them over to using an inhaler. You have to use a little chamber similar to what they use in children that can't use an inhaler effectively, where you put it on the cat's face and you have to obviously desensitize them to it. You put a puff in or, you know, whatever the dose is for the cat, and then let them breathe for a number of breaths to be able to get that chamber emptied. That cats sometimes do very well on that. But you're right to be thinking about secondary infections. There's kind of two big things that we'll sometimes see in cats. One of them is a secondary infection with a bug called mycoplasma. And then sometimes we'll see cats with heartworm disease having symptoms that look like asthma as well. And so if I have a cat in that looks like it that may be, you know, having asthma, I'll often run a heartworm check on them. If we really want to get down and dirty, I'd probably ended up sending the kitty off to one of my colleagues for something called a tracheal wash, where they can collect some of the material. Obviously, this has to be done when they're asleep, but they collect material from down in the lungs by flushing some sterile saline in and then culturing that to find out what the bugs are and getting cytology so that they have an idea of what you're actually dealing with. So that's one route you can go. Sometimes we'll just empirically treat them for mycoplasma, and that would be something to talk to your veterinarian about to get the kitty on an appropriate antibiotic.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thank you, Jeremy, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Susan in Fountain City a chance to join us next. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a 13-year-old rat terrier who we've had since he was a puppy, and he's been having some episodes, and we're not quite really sure what's going on. He's been not really lethargic. He's been sleeping more than normal, but sometimes, maybe once a week or so, he goes into a not a confusion stage, but like a shaking, and he will not be able to, I don't know how to explain it. Like, he tries to move, but he moves very slowly, very carefully, and sometimes his legs just go out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's his age or if, and sometimes his eyes will make some funny movements, and maybe he's having a seizure. I don't know.
That's what it sounds like. I really think that your dog may be having a seizure, especially if you've got kind of strange eye movements, the fact that it's happening once, about weekly, not that mm-hmm. that's an indication of seizures, but being an older dog, we do sometimes see them getting, like, their legs may get a little shaky at times, especially if they're overusing them. It's because they have tend to have more muscle weakness and some arthritis and things. And so we can see some, quivering and muscle trembles, but they're usually mentally alert. They can still walk. They can get along fine. But it sounds like your dog's got something more going on. What I would recommend is getting your dog into your veterinarian, having a good physical exam done, a neurologic exam done to check reflexes and cranial nerves and so on, getting some blood work done to make sure that your dog isn't running into troubles with having maybe hypoglycemia or underlying liver disease or something that could be triggering this. And then the decision has to be made is how do you want to go about if you don't find any underlying cause. Do you go jump in and get an MRI done to start looking for things like brain tumors? That is something that your veterinarian can consult with you about. Some people just choose to try therapeutics and getting them on an anticonvulsant drug to try to control them. So lots of different things that can be done, but I think I'd be getting your dog in ASAP.
There we go.
Okay, and what is the life expectancy on a rat terrier?
Well, rat terriers come in all different shapes and sizes. Some are bigger, some are smaller. But typically, mm-hmm. we'll see them 15, 18 years is not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and we call him our Tootsie Roll because he's round, and he's brown and white, and he's just a delightful
dog. Oh, he sounds great. Well, yeah. Take a picture and put it up on my Facebook page.
Okay, I'm out of town right now, but when I get home, I will.
Do that, because I'd love to see you. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. That is our page.
Okay.
Thanks, Susan. Sarah in Arcadia. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I actually graduated from the vet school in Madison 10 years ago. I enjoy listening every month. I am primary medicine is cattle. I do cattle work, but we had our 15-year-old pet beagle pass away a week ago. Just in a 12-hour period, her face swelled up, and it was late at night when I had found her, and so I had given her dexamethasone injectable, just as the only thing that I had. Mm-hmm. And in the morning, she had black tarry diarrhea, and in a couple hours later, she had passed away.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
And my husband wouldn't let me do a necropsy on her. Everything around her face was very edematous, very swollen, and very soft, except for two glands that were probably the size of an orange, just ventral to her ears, or left ear. So he did let me cut open and take a biopsy, which I sent down to the diagnostic lab. Mm-hmm. No results yet. But inside that was some very putrid material. The rest was very, full of edema.
Mm-hmm.
So my best guess is a tumor, but it was, we scratch her every day. She, has free roam, and she's outdoors exclusively. I just didn't think an allergic reaction would do that. No swelling in the mouth. Could eat in that last few hours before she passed away comfortably.
Yeah.
So just any thoughts with that connection between the digestive problem and the edema?
Yeah, a couple of things that I worry about. One would be, if she was on any other medications like an anti-inflammatory, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory when you gave an injection of dexamethasone.
No, nothing at all.
Okay, nothing at all. It's possible steroids themselves can cause GI bleeding if you give a pretty high dose. I'm worried that your dog may have had, especially if it was in the lymph nodes that were enlarged, lymphosarcoma. And sometimes mm-hmm. you can have enough. The lymph nodes can get quite large very, very quickly. You can get enough lymphatic blockage that it could cause kind of localized swelling. And so that would be my best guess. I would think that if she had an allergic reaction, you would probably see other areas of the body, like maybe with hives or something, and she would have responded very quickly to a steroid injection to stop that allergic reaction. Why she bled internally? Oh my goodness, I have no idea. But she did have lymphoma. Was it did she have stress related issues? Did she have other gut lymphoma as well that could have caused this? It's going to be a mystery, but I'm so glad that you at least got biopsies done of the lymph nodes, because even veterinarians need to know. My own dogs, I've lost two in the last year and a half or so, and boy, it happened so suddenly on both of them, and it really gave me that sense of relief that, okay, it wasn't anything that I missed or that, I could have dealt with earlier. That would have been a time to ignore what your husband was saying and go by your veterinary gut and say, I need to get some answers. I'm so sorry for your loss.
I am too, and I wish we had more time to talk. We need to take a quick break to take a look at the news, the weather, and find out what else is in store for us. And then we'll be back with Dr. Sandy. She'll be with us right up till 12:30. You stay with us. So happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we look at ways to keep your pet happy and healthy with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Call in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Post on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show for that, that page. And also you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Audrey and Racine's been waiting a long time, so let's just go right to Audrey. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. A few weeks back, you had a client call in and their dog had mega esophilus. Disease.
Mm-hmm.
I know I pronounced that wrong. Mm-hmm. And I used to have a Chesapeake Bay Retriever that had that exact problem. And we ended up, and I don't know if this would help your other caller, but we ended up making him like a bed that was on an incline that was probably about 12 to 15 degree pitch. And we measured him when he was sleeping to make sure that the bed was not wide enough where he could curl around, back around where his head would be facing downward. So his head was always facing up and his tail was always facing down. So his food always ran down and stayed down when he laid. Because we noticed when he would lay flat, he would kind of like burp and his food would all come right back up. And making this bed actually really took care of, the problem that we had with him.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. And, they do make, there's, if you go online and look up, I can't remember what they're called. There's somebody's chair, and it was, somebody designed it for dogs with megaesophagus where they can actually be comfortable and be sitting upright. And they have plans on there where you can design it for your own, you know, the size that you need for your dog. I've seen them. Probably the biggest dog I've had in with megaesophagus was a very large German Shepherd, and they built one, and that dog lived a long time just being fed in that particular chair. It's almost like a high chair that forces the dog to sit up so that their legs are sticking out from underneath, and they stay in that upright position. So good for you, though, for developing a bed. And
what we ended up doing is we took a painting ladder. And we took this painting ladder and put his hamburger slurry that we made for him on top of this ladder, and we put a bucket around it so he wouldn't splatter my walls. And after he ate, because he had to eat this basically hamburger milkshake on an incline, and he was three steps up with his feet on the floor, and so everything ran downwards. After that, we made him sit for about an hour to make sure everything ran through. And because then what he would want to do is he would want to eat real quick and then lay down. And he kept on going into pneumonia. And when we found out the reason for his pneumonia was this megaesophagus disease, then we did the ladder, making him sit, and made this special bed. And it worked wonders. So I hope that will help your caller. Oh.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, you can see any dog with megaesophagus, this is this dilated esophagus where it's normally a muscular tube that pushes the food from the mouth down to the stomach, just becomes this big dilated balloon. And it's a real problem for dogs because they're horizontal. And so stuff stays in there. And then if they lay in a certain position, material can flush up into the back of their throat and they inhale it. And that's why they get pneumonia. And often why they die is because they've aspirated. So they are very definitely special needs patients that require a lot of attention from owners, just like Audrey.
Like Audrey. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Audrey, thanks a lot. Really appreciate your call. It's a great suggestion. If you've got a photo of that bed, post it up on our Facebook page. I'd love to see it. Thank you again for calling. I want to give Dave in Neillsville a chance to join us, too. And let's turn there. Dave, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. See, I've got two Pomeranians. They're about 6 years old is what the Humane Society thought when I picked them up. Anyways, they've been vaccinated for kennel cough and everything. But from time to time, they'll have a hacking, like they're trying to clear their throats. And it's real irritating. It's like they're trying to hack up a furball or something. They don't ever cough up anything. Have any ideas?
Well, being the fact that they are small breed dogs, a very common problem in these tiny dogs is a condition called collapsing trachea. If you were to reach up and feel your neck, your trachea is that tube that has the bumps on it, that those are cartilage rings that hold it into shape. And for some reason, very common in small breed dogs, little Yorkies and poodles and so on, including Pomeranians, though instead of having very rigid cartilage rings, they're flexible and soft. And so if the dogs were to get excited, pull on their collar, anything like that, their trachea will start like snapping down and they'll get this real hoarse, kind of almost like a goose honky type cough. And that would be my best guess as to what's going on just because of their breed. But the fact that there's two of them and they're both like this, I mean, is it something contagious? Very unlikely. I would expect that if they had something that was infectious, like a kennel cough problem, they would be really sick and you would be seeing stuff being coughed up and so on. And that's not happening. So I'm really wondering about this collapsing trachea. And that's something that sometimes we can get an x-ray of and we can actually see it narrowing down. Sometimes we have to resort to doing something called fluoroscopy, which is a moving x-ray where we have the dog lay and they take an x-ray while the dog's breathing to see if the trachea is changing its shape as they're breathing in and out. But, you know, what can you do about it? Not a whole lot. Use a harness, keep them slender, and, you know, sometimes we have to have them on some anti-inflammatory drugs if they have a real bad bout of it, but typically they just live with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I notice they do when they get more excited, like when we bring them in from outside.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do it more.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. We had Sue in Sugar Camp with a question for us as well, Sandy. So let's go there. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I have a question about neutering a male Springer puppy. Last time we had a dog neutered, I think 8 years ago or so, I think the prevailing time was 7 or 8 months. And talking with my vet now, he's suggesting we wait at least a year because of issues with ACL tears and other things. And I was just wondering what the research on that is.
Well, the research that's been done has come out of UC Davis and I believe Georgia as well. And they've looked at just Labrador Retrievers and Golden Retrievers. So there's been no specific work done on Springer Spaniels. But what they found is that, you know, delaying spaying or neutering until they've developed their bodies, and so over a year of age, it decreased the risk of developing things like anterior cruciate ruptures and some of the other joint-related problems that we may see. Since we know that the sex hormones are involved with growth plate closure in bones. And so it makes sense to a degree, but how can we extrapolate that to other breeds? That's a good question. The downside of waiting, so I'll give you my story. I have a puppy that is going to be a year next month, Pete. He's a new bulldog puppy. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to try to let him stay intact until he's about a year. Then I'm going to be responsible and get him neutered because I don't want to, you know, have him running away or going after girls at the dog park or anything like that. But when he hit puberty, he had a total personality change and started taking on my older adult neutered male to the point where we had some pretty serious fights. I ended up calling work on a Sunday, very frustrated, and just said, I have an emergency. I have to get my dog neutered. And you know, everybody laughed. But I got him in that week, and within 2 days after neutering, he was back to being his old lovable self again. It was very, very,
no.
You know, and I wanted to wait, but obviously I couldn't. And so you do have the risk of sometimes some, you know, unwanted behavior problems developing. You run the risk of him potentially impregnating another animal, since so you have to really be a responsible owner and not be taking him to places like the dog park or anything where he's going to be off leash and potentially get in trouble with a girl in heat. And, you know, lifting his leg on things and so on. So there's a number of things like that we can run into problems with. So, I think there's definitely pros and cons either way. But if you can be responsible and know that, accepting of behaviors that may pop up, waiting isn't a bad idea.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Sue. Appreciate it. I got an email from Jack in La Crosse, whose 2-year-old male cat had his first ever sudden urinary tract blockage. Oh, I know that story. Happened on a Saturday night. I had to go to an emergency clinic for an operation right away. Then they transferred the records to my own vet, but I can't get information from either one on how long I have to wait until he's urinating normally. It's been about a week, and he's still urinating in a lot of small amounts. He's eating and drinking and otherwise acting normally. How long should I wait before taking more action? How long does he need to be on a prescription food?
Well, the prescription diet thing is probably forever because this can happen again. And I'm not sure what you meant by surgery. It may be that he was just catheterized until they could relieve the obstruction. And now he, is still sounds like he's still pretty irritated, or whether he actually had a procedure done called a perineal urethrostomy, where they amputate the distal end of the penis and have a wider urethra that they can urinate through. But I think this would be a time to be going back in and saying, hey, my cat's not normal. Your cat, if it was catheterized, may have a urinary tract infection. And so I think getting your cat in for another urinalysis and potentially a culture to see what's going on there. This is not normal. I would not be thinking that your cat would still be symptomatic at this point. So time to go back in.
And very dangerous for the cat.
Oh, yeah. Life-threatening if they obstruct. Yes.
Yeah, I had that. We had that just about a year ago, didn't we?
You did. You went through a lot, didn't you? Yeah.
With Coco, one of our cats. So, and he had that surgery and has been fine ever since.
But he's also on a special diet. And
Yeah. And will be
for life.
For life. Yep. There you go. Clint in Duluth, Minnesota, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Oh, good afternoon.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have inherited a 14-year-old Bichon from my mother who just passed away, and it has multiple sebaceous adenomas, all the way from, you know, just little specks to some as large as maybe twice the size of a pea.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, is this something you remove them all at once, or do you remove them,
a couple at a time?
Mm-hmm. Or maybe not remove any of them, since if they're not bleeding, they're not bothering the dog, it's cosmetic. I mean, these sebaceous adenomas, if they truly have been diagnosed as that, and they do have a very distinctive look, they almost look like a piece of pink cauliflower. They kind of have little nubblies that, you know, kind of ends to it. But, you know, if they're bleeding, if they're, you know, if they're in a spot where the dog can get at them easily, then having them removed would be indicated. But for the most part, we don't usually take them off. And, you know, you can have it done with cryosurgery. It can be done surgically, you know, just with a blade and suture material afterwards as well. But you also have to be thinking about if you are going to be putting this dog through surgery, you know, there's risks involved with anesthesia. You're going to want to be making sure that the dog is as healthy as can be, thorough physical, complete blood work, then anesthesia to be able to have these things removed. So, I mean, I would consult with your vet as to whether they feel that they even really need to come off.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Stanley in Milwaukee, hi, thanks for calling.
Hello, Sandy Sawchuk and Larry Mueller. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 13-year-old female wire-haired fox terrier. She's very healthy, and I take her to the vet, you know, for all her shots and everything. And the vet, I wouldn't say that she complained, but she said she's overweight.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would ask me what I feed her. And anyway, Tessa never weighed over more than 24 pounds. And I feed her Fromm's Gold dry dog food,
mm-hmm.
a cup a day, a half for breakfast and half of it for supper. And, of course, when I'm eating, I'll give her some little schnecks.
Oh, the truth comes out. And, yeah.
a heaping spoon of yogurt and a spoonful of cottage cheese, about the same amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then I let her chew on a rolled rawhide bone for 10 minutes.
Okay.
And she'll break pieces off of that, of course.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty high in calories as well.
So I believe it is, but we do walk a lot. We used to walk 4 miles a day, but in the wintertime, we only walk 2 miles.
Okay.
And I also, sometimes if it's too bad out, she'll walk on the treadmill with me. So
Yeah.
Well, so one of the things that I see often is owners that are in denial about the body shape of their pets. We every time a pet comes in, we do what's called body condition scoring, which is, it's a little subjective, but, and again, you can find this online. There's either a 1 to 5 scale or a 1 to 9 scale like the vet school uses. One is the dog that is the walking skeleton, and 9 is the dog that is morbidly overweight or obese. We consider a 4 or 5 being normal. And I have to trust your veterinarian as being the one that probably is the best judge of whether your dog's carrying any extra weight or not. Things that you would look at would be feeling over the ribs. And again, people say, well, look, I can feel the ribs and they're pushing really hard. You should just with your palm of your hand, putting it over the rib cage. I usually put my thumbs up on the backbone and just use my palm of my hand and gently rub over the chest, and you should be able to feel ribs. And if you don't, then there's probably too much there. We also look to make sure your dog has a waist from below and from above. And then we start looking at areas like fat pads over the sternum, fat pads over the rear end. Dogs can have various like fat distribution patterns that not always consistent dog to dog. So we look at all those things. And then we look at body weight trends as well. So we're going back, and we always want to see what they weighed the last visit or what they weighed when maybe they were younger, two or three active dog, you know, when they were, you know, more active, and just see what the trend has been. So I think that trusting your veterinarian, if your dog is carrying extra weight, you can actually have them be healthier by getting some of that weight off. And the first thing is, you know, yes, definitely counting calories, but those calories from the cottage cheese and the yogurt are really going to be hard to be able to come up with, you know, how much you're actually giving, because it's kind of like a heaping teaspoon, and all those things add up. And remember, as dogs get older, their metabolism slows down as well. And so they tend to need fewer calories as they get older. So you may need to be switching to either a lower calorie senior food or, a reduced calorie diet. So your dog's getting enough of the basic nutrients, but not extra fat or carbohydrates to start adding on to some of the pounds. I'm so glad you're exercising with your dog. You know, 2 miles a day for a dog that age in the winter is amazing. But if your vet says it's overweight, trust them. Okay.
Thank you again for calling, Stanley. We had an email from Susan, who said, I want to give a shout out to the lady who called, who was so sad, who called about her sister's dog. And here's what Susan says to the lady who called. She says the dog was very lucky that she gave it a good home and was a family member, which most likely added some comfort to the dog. When I worked with hospice, we saw many pets find good homes with family or friends, but unfortunately, at times, the pets were neglected, abused, or dumped. Also, I want to share a story. I stopped to visit a patient, remember now she was working in hospice, a patient with end-stage cancer, and he was smiling. He said, "My dogs were here last night." His dogs had passed on several years earlier. The vision gave him a lot of comfort, and the pets do live on, if you ask me, she says.
That is so wonderful, and it's true. I mean, they always live on in your heart. So even the Pope says that dogs go to heaven now. So
is that right?
That's true.
I did not know that.
Yep.
Well, there are a lot of things I don't know, to be perfectly honest. If you want, as I demonstrate pretty much every day here on this program, it's always so much fun to talk, Sandy. And I know there were things that we wanted to cover, we didn't get covered. I know there's some a fun topic, the most Googled dog and cat questions, and we don't have time to answer them, but do you have a few that can?
Yeah, we have. I mean, of the ones, the number one for dogs is, why do dogs eat grass? And I'm like, why would that be number one? Why would someone? But, you know, dogs sometimes just like a salad now and then, you know, and that's, and so it may be very normal, but if it's accompanied with them feeling nauseous, anything else, then there may be some underlying reason. They may be eating it because it's a purgative. The number one
for cats
is, why do cats purr? And it actually, purring starts in the brain. Did you know that?
I mean,
it starts in the brain, and it sends a message to the muscles of the larynx, the voice box, and it causes them to twitch. And so it's a really interesting thing, and it just causes the vocal cords to vibrate a little bit, and so that's why they can purr even while they're inhaling and exhaling, because it's all that vibration that's happening.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. So it's up in the brain. So
I thought it was, they were happy to see me.
Well, it's usually can either be from contentment, or it may be because they're frightened or threatened. Sometimes they, or even like pain. We've seen cats that are in labor that are purring, or just got hit by a car
goodness.
That are purring. So, you know, it's kind of it's like similar to a smile, you know? That's the way I look at it.
Dr. Sandy, thank you so much. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thank you very much.
Sandy usually stops by the second Tuesday of the month, so her next visit will be Tuesday, March 10th. So we're going to certainly look forward to that. And really, thank you so much for listening in today. Lots of great questions. I really appreciate it. Tomorrow, just to look ahead, Professor Deborah Blum will be here to talk about the importance of effectively communicating science to the public. We'll also take a look at some recent successful examples. 11:45, ever wonder what makes a weed a weed? Well, visit with the author of The Weeds of North America and learn a whole lot more about weeds. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.